Well, guys, today we're going to talk about something a little bit difficult. And I got to tell you, Pastor Brian and I have been talking about this series for probably the last at least 2 months. And my friends, as we were talking about this series, the theme of relationships kept coming up. And what we've discovered here at Fairlawn, at least, and this is going to be a conversation mainly for our family members here at Fairlawn. So if you're a visitor today, just kind of sit back and listen, but know that this isn't as much me talking to you, okay? And what I've discovered, at least in my close to 4 years of being here, is that relationships, especially when within the church, can be really, really, really hard. Okay? And what we came up with is this idea that it can be really messy. Okay? Because there's not a formula for relationships, right? You can't do this plus this equals this, and all of a sudden you have a wonderful relationship. And this can be with friends, parents, kids, whatever. Relationships can be messy. Now, let's go ahead and switch to our polls real quick, because the first question that I asked you guys is, what do relationships look like to you? Okay? If you were to just use one word to describe relationships, how would you describe them? Now, this is what's kind of cool about this, okay? These are all of our answers, and I know that we have so many answering that you probably can't see this, but this is what's fun. The ones that are the bigger ones are the words that keep resurfacing over and over and over again, okay? So what do we got up here? We got love, trust, respect, communication, commitment, forgiveness, friendship, loyalty, hard, messy, someone's sucking up, great, graceful, self-controlled, supportive, challenging, hurtful, understanding. And you see that all across the board, there are all of these different adjectives that describe relationship, right? But as we started talking about this series, we realized that there's this one kind of concept that has to be a part of relationships in order for them to work. And it's the concept of grace. Okay? And that's what we're going to unpack just a little bit more today, is this concept of grace, and what does grace really look like in context of relationship? Now, guys, I need you to hear my heart on this, okay? This is a really, really hard topic, all right? Because I said this to a couple of people this morning, but it's really easy to be ungracious when you're talking about grace, okay? And I don't want to be ungracious when we're talking about this, but I think that for the church, and this might be a really hard thing to hear, but just stay sitting down and listen to me throughout this whole sermon. I think sometimes the church has a harder time wrapping their arms around grace than sometimes even the culture does, okay? Because hear me on this. If you don't have high expectations, it's easy to give grace, right? If you don't have any expectations that you're expecting anyone to live up to, it's easy to give a lot of grace because you're not getting hurt. But for us in the church, or Christians who are very loyal Christ followers, we know what we're expected to do, right? And we know what we want other people to do, because if we have to act this way, then we want others to act the way that we do. And all of a sudden, my friends, we start to miss the point of grace. So let's go back to our poll really quickly. I asked the question in one or two words, okay? Let's describe some reasons why there's broken relationships. This is hard, okay? There's lots of different reasons for broken relationship. Biggest one on there: cheating, selfishness, lying, anger, distrust, unfaithfulness, resentment, misunderstandings, being too busy, fighting, dishonest, money, loyalty, addictions, change. All of these, do you see all of these things? But let's look at this, take a step back. Can we say that for a lot of these, unforgiveness, selfishness, distrust, a lot of those, if we covered them with grace, I think the relationships might change a little bit. If we really understood the concept of grace and what grace means to us, I think that those relationships might not stay broken. I think that possibly there is a way to be redemptive. Now, this is what's interesting, though. Because while we know that grace is a good thing, it's still really hard, isn't it? But here's the thing. I think, and I could be wrong about this. I'm not always, but I think I'm right about this one. I think that relationships, to the degree that you can receive what God has given you, okay? And in this instance, we're talking about grace, okay? To the degree that you can accept grace, that is the degree that you will be able to have meaningful relationships with the people around you. And if you cannot accept grace, or if you only accept grace minimally, you will not be able to extend grace in your relationships because you don't know what it's about in the first place. Now, my friends, I know we are Christians. I know we know about grace. We sing about it all the time. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Even people that aren't in the church all the time know these stories. But here's the problem. Grace is really well used. It's a very well used word in our American culture. Think about it. How many different ways do we hear about grace in our culture? Students, you take out a loan to go to school, okay? You get 6 to maybe 4 years to pay back your loan, and you're in a what? Grace period, right? And you might look at someone, if you ever had the chance to talk to a king and queen, I don't know when you would have that opportunity, but if you ever did, you might describe them as, hello, your grace, right? And if someone is really kind or nice, you might say, oh, they are so gracious. And there's even this concept in magazines where they put you in a gracing period. Have you ever heard about this? This is whenever you don't have a subscription anymore because it's run out, but they'll send you a couple of magazines for a couple of months afterwards, hoping that you'll resubscribe, but you're in a gracing period, so you get those one or two magazines for free. All over our culture, we hear about grace. We know the words, we know the verses, we know the things that people talk about. But the problem is because culture's version of grace and the theological version of grace are two completely different things, and we try to apply our culture-ridden idea of grace to God, and that is where we miss the point. You see, my friends, even in all of these situations, the grace period for the loan, gracing for magazines, this, that, and the other, there's a limit to the grace you can get, right? You have to start paying back your loan eventually. You have to end up getting a subscription. You're not going to keep getting magazines for free. But my friends, that is so countercultural to what God meant when he introduced grace. I think that grace affects a lot of us in different ways. There's some people that this whole grace thing, you might be sitting here today and you're like, dude, I am only here because I lost a bet. I really do not even care about grace, okay? And if that's you, again, just sit back and listen for a second. But I really think that in this room, we probably fall into one or two categories. Either we know about grace, but we don't think we need very much of it. I mean, we're good people, so we just need enough to get into heaven, and that's all we need, okay? But then there's those people, right? The ones who know about grace, but as soon as they hear about it, they think it's too good to be true, and they feel like they need too much grace because of what they've done in their past or what they've experienced, and we fall into kind of these two camps. And this is what's so funny, guys. Have you ever thought about what sets Christianity apart from any other religion? Have you thought about it? Because here's the thing. There was this conference going on in Britain, okay? It was the Conference of Comparative Religions, all right? And this was about 20 years ago. It was a while ago, okay? Actually, it was probably even longer than that now that I think about it. And they were all discussing about these differences in grace, okay? And someone brought up resurrection, but you know, that's raising from the dead is in a couple other religions, and they talked about incarnation when God comes down and lives with people, but there's other religions that have that. And so they were discussing it, and it sounds like they discussed it for almost days, okay? And then C.S. Lewis enters the picture. And he's like, hey guys, what are you doing? What's going on? And they said, well, we're trying to decide what makes Christianity Christianity. What separates it from any other religion? And C.S. Lewis pipes up and he goes, oh, that's easy. It's grace. Because every other religion, every other way that you get to God, you have to perform. But for Christianity, all you have to do is receive. Let's go back to, Miss Carrie, you don't have to put up the slide, but let's go back to that quote that we talked about earlier. It is to the degree that you can receive what God has done for you that you will be able to give to others to have meaningful relationships. Aren't you so glad it starts with receiving, not performing? Aren't you so glad that it has nothing to do with how good of a father you are, how good of a person you've been your entire life, how many cuss words you've said last year or didn't say last year, how many times you cut people off in traffic or let them go ahead of you? It has nothing to do with your performance. It has to do with what you can receive. Now, for some of us, my friends, especially Christians, this is hard. And I already see some of the wheels turning in your head, and you're going, but Shauna, it's not that easy. But Shauna, James says, and you are exactly right, and we're going to get to this, but my friends, if we cannot start out with grace, if that is not where we start in our relationships, then we will end up in the wrong spot. So what does grace look like? It's funny because I was reading a book kind of preparing for the sermon called What's So Amazing About Grace. It's by Philip Yancey, and oh my word, guys. If you want something to completely challenge your perspective, read that book. And what he did is he was trying to figure out this idea of grace and why in culture we have such a negative connotation in people's mouth when it comes to grace. And so what he started doing is he started asking all of these random people on the airport, on the bus, maybe in the grocery store, what's your take on Christianity? What do you think of Christians? And this is what he said. They think that church is a place to go after you have cleaned up your act, not before. They think of morality, not of grace. Church, said the prostitute. Why would I ever go there? I was already feeling terrible about myself, and they'd just make me feel worse. Do you guys hear that? Do you guys feel that? This is someone who is searching for God, and their idea of meeting the people that can introduce him, that can introduce her to him is, I don't even want to go there because I don't want to feel worse about myself. My friends, this is the idea that culture has about us. Are you feeling that? Now, I know what some of you guys are thinking. I know that some of you might be thinking, well, Shauna, this might be a skewed view. And, well, I know a lot of graceful people. And, my friends, I do too. Okay? I am not saying that we don't have grace in our church, but I am saying that at some point, we as Christians, sometimes, we start to miss what grace is really all about. Now, let's go back to our pool really quickly for our last question. The last question went like this. Have you experienced ungrace in the church? The answers were yes, no, or yes multiple times. Now, before we hit this, okay, you're going to see it come up in just a second. But before we talk about it, let me explain what ungrace is, okay? Ungrace is not grace, but it's also this idea of expecting people to behave a certain way before we extend them what God gave us freely. Okay? Are you with me on that? I'll repeat it one more time. We are expecting someone else to behave a certain way before we give them what God gave us freely. Now let's go to the pool. Yes, no, yes, a lot of times. Yes and yes multiple times, by far take the cake. And my friends, I know, this might not be a fair question. Maybe I should have asked, have you experienced ungrace in the church more than grace, maybe? But my friends, if this is the church, and if we have truly experienced grace, there should not be yes on the board. Do you hear me on that? Are you guys with me on this? And my friends, I am trying really hard not to be ungracious when I talk about this, but there is something we are missing when the church is full of broken relationships and people who refuse to reconcile and people who are full of ungrace and they accept grace from God and then they hold it for themselves and they refuse to give it to others. My friends, we are missing the point. Do you have any unreconciled relationships? Do you have any relationships that you refuse to talk to that person, or you will not work on the team if they're on the team because I don't want to put up with them, or anyone that you are estranged with from your family that you don't talk to? Because my friends, pretty safe, if you're a Christian, I would say it's a pretty safe bet that ungrace has a part to play. Why is it so hard for us? Why is it so hard for us to give grace that, I'll repeat this one more time, that we got freely? Do you know, I sometimes wonder if we as Christians are at a little bit of a disadvantage when it comes to this. Okay? Because we don't have, especially if we grew up in the church, okay, we don't have this big pit that we dug for ourselves that we need God to reach in and pull us out. We have experienced grace about this much. And part of me wonders if that's the reason. Have you ever seen a completely new convert? One who lived in a complete life of sin, okay? Did everything under the book, but then someone, grace-filled, caught a hold of their life, and they realized that God could change it. Have you ever seen how their life changes? Also, have you ever noticed normally how grace-filled they are? Because all of a sudden they're going, oh, no, 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 no. I've been there. I know what that's like. I've experienced that. But for us as Christians, a lot of times we go, well, I didn't do that. And this is my, one of the phrases drives me crazy. Well, if I can fill in the blank, then you should be able to fill in the blank. Does that have grace in it at all? But my friends, I need you to hear me on this, okay? This is where I struggle the most. All right? You guys have probably heard me say this as a children's pastor, and I have been checked on this when it comes to what I say about teens. Hey, I love you. Don't hate me for this. But whenever I talk about working with teens, I say this. You guys have probably heard me say it a million times. I love kids because they're pretty innocent, and they don't know any better. But once you reach 11 years old, it doesn't matter what you do. You're old enough to know better. And you laugh. And it's funny, but my friends, where is grace in that? Where is grace to, another one of my favorite phrases that I got to rethink is, oh, nope, I just lost it. Oh, I have no problem giving empathy to someone who's innocent or doesn't know any better. I have no problem giving empathy to someone who's innocent or doesn't know any better. Where I struggle is when you should know better. And my friends, that's where our relationships are right now. If we have unreconciled relationships, if we have relationships that we're avoiding most of the time, It's because you're looking at that person and you're saying, hey, for this reason and this reason and this reason and this reason, you're supposed to know better. And my friends, that's not grace. Dallas Willard says something that I love this quote. Because I think that for some people, we can err, some people look at grace and they go, but Shauna, if we continue to give grace, we can get taken advantage of and people won't actually, change their lives, or it might look like we're not standing up for our beliefs and no one wants to do that. And we make all of these excuses, right? But Dallas Willard says something that really takes a different take on this. He says, grace is not opposed to effort. It's opposed to earning. Effort is an attitude. Earning is an action. And my friends, I really believe this, that as soon as we begin to think that actions will somehow influence our relationship with Christ, then we don't really know what grace is. And we haven't really experienced the meaning of grace. Are you guys with me on that? A definition of grace that I came across while I was doing this study in the What's So Amazing About Grace by Philip Yancey. He says this. He says, grace means that there is nothing you can do to make God love you anymore. Nothing. It doesn't matter how many times you go to church. It doesn't matter how much you tithe. It doesn't matter if you're a Sunday school teacher or if you're an usher or if you greet every week. It does not matter on the how much God loves you. Now, hear me on this, okay? I believe God does call us to do some of those things. We need volunteers here. I'm not saying don't volunteer. But my friends, it does not affect in any way how much God loves you. And let me tell you something. There is nothing that neighbor that you can't stand can do to make God love them anymore either, because my friends, he loves them as much as he ever will right now. Even when they're stealing stuff from your garage, and even when they're not mowing their lawn the way they should, even when that coworker is driving you absolutely batty, God still loves them right now as much as he ever will. And my friends, that's good news. And what I can't understand, is if our religion is based on this grace, why aren't we, the supposed professors of this religion, oozing grace in every inch of our being, in our relationships with parents and kids and family? Why isn't grace the author of everything that we do? Jesus led the way on this. The reason why we have the grace we do is because on a day in history, the God of the universe wanted a relationship with us, and he put forth a plan and carried it out to make sure it happened. And we did nothing to deserve it. So if we accept God's grace, knowing that we have done nothing to deserve it, why is it so hard for us to turn around and do it for someone else? Well, Pastor Shauna, I might get taken advantage of. Well, Pastor Shauna, it's just not fair. You're right. It's not. But was it fair that the God of the universe, who is perfect in all matter of being, died for you and for what you've done? My friends, I think that as we start to experience this grace, and if we really start to appreciate it the way we would, it would influence every part of our dealings with every person we experience. Luke chapter 15, we're not going to actually talk about this story, mainly because I've already told you the story like last year at some point. But I wanted to hit on the story real quick because there's a really great analogy here. So this story is called The Story of the Prodigal Son or The Lost Son, okay? And I'm going to just really kind of gloss over it really quickly, okay? There's these two guys, two sons of a loving father. One basically says to his dad, I wish you were dead. He goes out and squanders everything that he has, okay? On partying, on people, on who knows what, okay? And the entire time, the older brother has stayed home. He's done what he was expected to do. He followed the rules. He helped his dad. He did everything and probably picked up the slack for his little brother as well, right? And then the numbnut comes home. And the dad's been watching, and he throws this huge party, and it says that the older brother, check me on this because I'm right, the older brother says, I'm not even going to go into the party, okay? I'm not even going to enter the party because I have been doing everything I was supposed to, and he has done nothing to deserve it, and he's the one that gets the party. Poor baby. And dad looks at him and he goes, hey, you've had what I've given you. You have been experiencing that the entire time this prodigal son's been gone. And now he's home. And so I'm going to give him that too. And my friends, I really believe that in that story, it is the prodigal son who truly experienced the father's grace. It wasn't the older son, but it wasn't because the father wasn't extending grace. It's because the older brother could not get out of the way of himself and think to himself, no, this isn't fair. And my friends, it kept him from experiencing grace the way it should be. Henry Nouwen, in his book called in his book called The Return of the Prodigal Son, says it this way. The more I reflect on the elder son in me, the more I realize how deeply rooted this form of lostness really is, and how hard it is to return home from there. Returning home from a lustful escapade seems so much easier than returning home from the cold, from a cold anger that has rooted itself in the deepest corners of my being. I think I'm going to read that one more time. Because my friends, I think so often, especially for those older brothers, we are so worried about what we've been doing and haven't been doing that we miss the part of grace. And we don't even realize that there's bitterness and anger just welling up in us because of all the grace someone else is getting that they don't deserve. Can I read this one more time? The more I reflect on the elder son in me, the more I realize how deeply rooted this form of lostness really is, and how hard it is to return home from there. Returning home from a lustful escapade seems so much easier than returning home from a cold anger that has rooted itself in the deepest corners of my being. So how do we keep from getting there? How do we keep from comparing ourselves to the prodigals and keep that anger and bitterness and frustration from taking root inside our soul? Because my friends, if we don't acknowledge this, if we don't acknowledge that it's even happening in us, then we're going to miss God's grace altogether. Not to say it's not available to you, but you're going to miss it because of this anger and bitterness that's stored up in you. Philip Yancey says something in his book, What's So Amazing About Grace, that I really, really like. He talks about this concept of having grace-healed eyes, okay? And what he says is that whenever you're interacting with people who it's hard to extend grace because it seems that they keep using it over and over and over again, he says, look for their potential, okay? Look for that potential that they have with grace-healed eyes. And then he says this, to love a person, oh, I love this, to love a person means to means to see him or her the way God intended him or her to be. Don't look at them as the numbnuts that they are and everything that they've done and how unfair it is, because, guys, that doesn't really matter. If it doesn't matter to God, it shouldn't matter to you. But instead, we don't just, you know, look over their mistakes or just say, oh, well, it doesn't really matter. But when it comes to those mistakes, we see them for how God intended them to be. And if we're not, if we were really honest, don't you think that's what we want for ourselves? Have you ever heard the phrase, this is, so my old, I have a family here today from my old church, and it's really kind of cramming my style because I'm stealing a lot of stuff from my other church, and they're going to know where I'm stealing it from. But Pastor John from my church back home says a phrase that I just really love. He says, we judge others by their actions, and we judge ourselves by our intentions, right? And my friends, the heart of that is ungrace, because we make excuses to God, right? Well, I didn't really mean to do that, but God, you didn't, you know, it's the thought that counts, right? And this is what we're doing. But as soon as someone else does it to us, it's their actions, not their intention, that matter, right? And that's a definition of ungrace. As I said before, my friends, I think that Christians, we're at a disadvantage only because for some of us, we haven't really experienced just how amazing grace can be. And if you haven't experienced it the way it should be, then it's hard to move that or to give that to anyone else, because we don't really know what it's like. And my friends, I think one of the best examples of this, actually, no, really quick, I got a Pastor Shauna story for you. It's not really a Pastor Shauna story, but when I was a kid, I know this will be hard for you to believe. I am a middle child, okay? And middle children are very concerned about fair. Okay? Like, very concerned about fair. And I'm talking that we had to count the Cheetos on everyone's plate to make sure that everyone had the right amount, because if not, this little middle child was going to yell foul, okay? And my mom and dad knew this, but my dad is very smart, and he started coming up with all of these really fun, random reasons why, you know, things aren't fair. And so he had these two go-to phrases that he always used. First of all, if I scream not fair, he would say, well, Shauna, fair's where you go to see pigs, okay? The other one that he used to say, and this one just really irritated me, he goes, well, Shauna, I tell you what, whatever it was that I wanted to do, he'd say, I will let you do that if you can find in the Bible where Jesus says life is fair, okay? I was 7 years old the first time he said that to me, and I whipped out my Bible, and I was like, oh, I'm going to find one. I did not find one. Because, my friends, what I have experienced is that, is at least as far as Jesus is concerned, he never preaches fair. He preaches that if you are a Christian, life will not be fair. He preaches that we will be persecuted for no reason, that we're going to have to give up things that we're actually going to want. We're going to have to let other people have their way first, and we're going to need to be last. And, my friends, that doesn't sound like fair to me. And so as soon as we start trying to compare ourselves and go, whoa, 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 this isn't fair, we are starting to miss grace. Because grace isn't fair. It's messy. And it's hard. So Paul, I think, is a really good example of what it looks like to really experience grace. Because, my friends, Paul even says in Scripture, he says that he has experienced grace because he was a sinner above sinners. And if you know anything about the Apostle Paul's story, you know that he started off actually persecuting Christians, and Jesus brought him to his knees, literally, in Damascus, and it completely changed his entire outlook on life. But, my friends, what I find so interesting about this is when it comes to Paul, who was not an original apostle of Jesus, And when it comes to Peter, who grew up, or didn't really grow up, but spent at least 3 years with Jesus learning and hearing from him, Paul had a better definition of grace. Paul realized what this idea was when you are so screwed up that the only way you get your life back on track is with God. But what's so interesting, and I think for some of us Christians, this is what happens, okay? We experience grace. And at first, like those new converts, we get so excited about grace and we do a lot of things because it's grace, and we might get involved in our church and we might do some things and we might even be pretty good at extending grace to others, okay? And then all of a sudden, we start putting emphasis on the things that we're doing, and this grace thing kind of falls by the wayside. But Paul is really good about, even in all of the stuff that he's done, even in all the things that he accomplished, he keeps going back to the only way that I accomplish any of these things is because I have, in a very real way, experienced the love of Jesus and the grace of God. That's the only way I do anything. And for some of us, my friends, I think that we think grace is only our get out of hell free card. Right? And we don't think about the fact that grace actually propels us to treat people the way that they're supposed to be treated, to act the way we're supposed to act, to imitate Jesus the way we're supposed to imitate Jesus. Are you with me on this? And so Paul says something really, really cool that I think kind of identifies this in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 10 and 11. He says, but because God was so gracious and so very generous, here I am. I'm not able to let his grace go to waste. Haven't I worked hard trying to do more than any of the others? Yet, even then, my work did not amount to anything much at all. It was God giving me the work to do and God giving me the energy to do it. It was grace that helped him be successful in all of the things that he did. It wasn't just grace that got him out of hell. Grace is what propelled him to go into the missionary field, to talk to the people that he talked to, and to do it with grace. Frederick Buchner pointed out something really interesting. Did you know that out of all of Paul's letters, which is like, I'm pulling this number out of my hat, but like 70% of the New Testament, I don't really know that it's that much, but there's a lot of the New Testament that Paul wrote. Every single one of his letters, within the first two sentences, mentions grace. Check me. And if I'm wrong, it's actually Frederick Buchner's fault. But most of the time, whenever he refers to grace, this is how it goes. Paul, the apostle of Christ Jesus, says hello to Galatians. Grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Over and over and over again. And Frederick Buchner says this. He says, I think that grace is the best Paul can wish them or offer them because it is the best thing he himself has ever received. My friends, how amazing would it be if anyone who is interacting with us in our first two sentences knew that we communicated grace, that above anything else, we hope they experience grace because it is, in fact, the best thing we have ever received. But my friends, as I said before, this is not the interpretation of the church and the world. We're known for the things that we do and that we don't do. We're known for our political stances on things. But when it comes to grace, it's definitely not within our first two sentences. And for me, it keeps going back to fair. I can give grace to someone who's outside our church. I can give grace, and I can give every inch of grace to the people, again, who don't know better. But for some of the people here who have hurt me, for some of the people here that have broken my trust or hurt me in a very real way, those are the people that I have trouble forgiving. Do you know why? Because they should know better, right? And my friends, all of a sudden, I am missing grace. All of a sudden, I don't know what grace means. Because again, as soon as we start expecting anyone to behave in order to get what I was given freely, we're not expecting them to have grace. We're expecting them to earn their morality. And my friends, that's not what Christianity is all about. And that's not what Jesus had in mind. There's some of you here who might be in the second category, who has experienced grace or wants to experience grace or has screwed up their lives so badly that they're sitting going, I seriously don't know how I'm going to get out. And if that's you here today, can I just start off by saying, on behalf of all of my Christian brothers and sisters, if I ever, or if one of us ever extended ungrace to you, we are sorry. And as much as that breaks my heart, it rips the heart out of our Father. It rips the heart out of our Father. Because, my friends, we can pretend really, really well in the church. We can put on our personas of being good. But if we can't practice grace, if we can't extend grace, then I wonder if we have really experienced grace the way it's supposed to be experienced. Some of you guys know this, but one of my favorite verses is Romans 5:8. And Cornerstone has heard me say this before, but these two words, but God, I think are the two best words in all of Scripture. Because every time there is a but God, there's a sentence that follows that no one else could qualify for other than God. And it says in Romans 5:8, but God demonstrates his love. And guys, I think you could even say his grace here for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for you. There's another part of that definition of grace that we haven't talked about yet. Grace is not is believing that there is nothing you can do to make God love you anymore. But there's another part to that. And there's nothing you can do to make God love you any less. It's not just all the good you do that can't make God love you anymore. There is nothing you can do, no choice that you will make, where God says, oh, well, if I would have known that back at Calvary, probably would not have gone. And my friends, this isn't cheap grace. Okay? I'm not saying that because you have the right to grace. Guys, I hate it when people use grace as like a barcode scanner. Like, oh, boop, I got grace. I'm into heaven. So I can do anything that I want to do. Because my friends, that is not a way that you experience grace either. But my friends, I need you to hear me on this. It does not matter what choices you make. It does not matter how many times you have done that thing or that addiction has come up or you've cheated or you've lied or you've screwed up this relationship and that relationship and you're looking at these relationships going, I don't even really have one that is consistent. It does not matter because God loves you the same now as the time you were born. And so, my friends, if you are in this second category and you're going, you know, Shauna, this grace thing, I like it. But it just seems too good to be true. Can I tell you? It's not. Can I tell you? It's the best thing you will ever experience. And can I tell you, though, that once you experience it, expect to have to give it out to others, because God expects us that if we have really experienced the grace and the love that he has given us the way we should, then we cannot help but extend grace to other people, because my friends, that is why God died for us in the first place. That is why Christ sent, or why God sent his son. That is why Christ decided to give up all of his rights, all of his honor, to come down and live among us for 30 years so that on a day, at some point, the person that feels so torn up, so beat down, and has no place to go can look at God and say, God, all I can do is receive it. I can't give anything to you because I don't have anything. And that, my friends, I think is one of God's favorite days, because one prodigal child has come home. And my friends, have you ever thought about the fact that if you don't extend grace to someone else, you could be keeping them from experiencing the grace of God? If you, who calls yourself Christ followers, does not extend grace to anyone else, you could be keeping someone from experiencing that grace. Hello? Do you all of a sudden feel a little bit of pressure? Because good, you should. Because my friends, God never said that grace is fair and just. He never said that everything's going to be easy and that you're going to get exactly what he deserves. Grace does not require fair. Grace just requires a lot of surrender. After all, that's what Jesus did, isn't it? He didn't cling to his rights that he earned as God of the entire universe. And my friends, have you ever thought about this too? There are so many different ways that Jesus could have come down and did what he did. But instead, he came down as a little, completely innocent baby boy who had to have his diaper changed, who had to be fed, who was completely reliant on another person. He didn't choose to come in this huge kingdom and like usher in this huge kingdom and show the Romans what's up. Instead, he came humbly and surrendered. And all he asks is that we do the same thing. Do you have any broken relationships today? You see, because grace, I think we really like grace until it's given to someone that we feel doesn't deserve it. And normally, the people we don't think deserve it is someone that's personally hurt us. Now, there's a story in Luke chapter 23 where it's traditionally thought of that there are two robbers that get hung on the cross next to Jesus. But actually, robbers only show up in some of the older translations. Most of the newer translations say something like criminal or revolutionary, which who knows what that means, and rebel and things like that. And so all of a sudden, when I realized that, it kind of changed my perspective a little bit. And this is what happens in this story. There's these two guys on either side of Jesus. They're all getting crucified on the cross. And one just starts mocking Jesus a lot. Like, hey, man, this is what you're doing. You're supposed to be the Son of God. Why don't you get us all down from here, and then we could go do whatever we want. And this other guy says, hey, you know what? This guy's innocent. We deserve what we get. he doesn't, so shut your mouth and stop saying that. And he asked God to remember him, and Jesus says, today you're going to be with me in paradise. And a lot of Christians love that story, right? They love the grace because at the very last minute, even if you've lived your entire life in sin, then you can still say that prayer and God is still going to forgive you and love you. But my friends, let's just get really personal real quick, okay? What if that guy that God forgave just swindled your entire family out of all of their life savings? What if that guy had raped your daughter? Or what if that guy had started your son on the drug addiction because he was the first person that gave him drugs? What if he killed one of your parents? If you were at the bottom of that cross watching him get executed because you were watching for justice to be served, do you really think that that grace thing, you'd be like, oh, right on, God. Yeah, cool. No. And the reason why, my friends, is because it's so hard for us. This is a natural instinct. It is so hard for us, if we have been hurt, to surrender our right for justice. To surrender our right for revenge or getting them back. But my friends, hear me on this. That's not grace. And it's not what God had in mind. A lot of you guys know this. I love the ocean. I always have, ever since I was a little kid. Which is part of the reason why I'm getting married beside the ocean, because I love the ocean. And I am, you know, I remember, I've been to the ocean only a handful of times. The first time I was only like 7, and I don't really remember much of it, except that I got really bad sunburn. But the second time that I went, or the most memorable time, I guess, I was a senior in college. And right after I graduated, me and my parents, we all went to Cancun. And I remember I was so excited, okay? I would look up pictures about what the ocean looked like and what the resort looked like, and I would even watch, like, these little videos that previous travelers at the same resort had taken, and I would listen to them and watch things and what part of the beach is the best. And, guys, I was so excited to go to the ocean, and I felt like there was, you know, like I knew the ocean. I understood the process. I know what high tide is. I know what low tide is. And I even remember that night, the very first night, we didn't get there till really late. I remember listening to the ocean from our balcony. But my friends, nothing compared to the moment when I abandoned my sandals and my towel on the beach and I waded out to the ocean, to where, you know, have you ever done this where your tiptoe is just like barely touching the bottom and you're kind of bobbing? It happens for me a lot quicker than probably most of you. But, you know, my little toe is bobbing, and then nothing compares to me experiencing the power of the ocean until I was standing there and the tide came in and it pushed me towards the shore and then sucked me back into its depths. I could read about it. I could look at pictures. I could sing about it. I could see pictures and magazines and videos. But until I was in the ocean experiencing the tide around me, I had no idea the power and the vastness of the tide. And my friends, for so many of us, we sing about grace. We know the verses. We know what we're supposed to do, and we know what we've experienced. But until we genuinely, like, entrench ourselves in grace and feel that power of grace around us, we will never truly be able to experience grace. That's why I loved the song that we sang at the very, very first. The song about how fierce God's love is. Can I just read this for you? This is the chorus of this verse. If you guys came in a little bit late, it's okay. It says this: like a tidal wave crashing over me, rushing in to meet me here, your love is fierce. Like a hurricane that I can't explain, tearing through the atmosphere, your love is fierce. My My friends, I think that applies to God's grace too. God's grace is fierce. And he doesn't limit it, and he doesn't expect you guys to perform to get it. I saw this analogy, and this really stuck with me. You know, God says that his grace and his mercy and his kindness is unlimitless. And it's like he takes his grace and he pours it over your life. And he goes, you need a little bit of grace? Here you go. You need a little bit of kindness? Oh, yeah, here you go. You need a little bit of mercy? Here you go. And it's the next day, and guess what? There's new mercies every morning. So you already start with a shovel right here. And then, oh, you need a little bit more grace? Well, I got a whole hill of Calvary right over here that I can scoop up and I can pour over your life. And there's nothing that I will do to keep you from it. And we look at God and we go, oh, God, thank you for your grace. Your grace is amazing. This is awesome. This is wonderful. But, my friends, when someone else comes up and asks for grace, we go, oh, yeah, I got some grace. Here you go. And, oh, you want some more? Okay, well, you need to do this, that, and the other. And then as soon as you prove that you're worthy, boop, here you go. And, my friends, we accept grace by the shovel load, but we dispense it with a teaspoon. And my friends, I think that God's looking and he goes, whoa, 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 whoa. There's a conversion discrepancy here. There's no part of grace. There's no part in our relationships for expecting performance to drive how we treat others. Do you have unreconciled relationships today? Do you have some people that maybe you haven't talked to in weeks, months, years? And is it possible that ungrace has something to play with that? A part to play in that? We're getting ready to go into kind of a reflection song. And then after that, I'll pray and we'll get out of here. But my friends, as we're reflecting, I think that it's really important that unless we take a good hard look at ourselves and try to pinpoint, because my friends, I really think there are moments when we all experience ungrace in our life. I really do. It could be a little bit, it could be a lot, but there's these trigger moments for all of us, okay? Where ungrace is just the natural thing that we go to. And my friends, we're human, okay? So that is going to be the response, but my friends, we need to try to fix that. We need to intentionally try to look at ourselves and say, where's the ungrace in me? Where do I need to accept God's grace so that I can give it to others? Because, my friends, as we started out this whole thing, it's only to the degree that we can receive grace that we're going to be able to give it to others in our relationships. Join me in singing as we're reflecting this morning. This week, I pray that y'all carry shovels so that you can shovel grace on those who need it. Go and have a great week, and we'll see you again next week. Pastor Brian's going to be back, so we're very excited about that. Thanks, guys.